Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You're no doubt hearing comparisons between President Trump's 2020 re-election campaign and the campaign of Richard Nixon in 1968. President Trump is emphasizing law and order in response to nationwide protests after the death of George Floyd. And when Nixon was a candidate, he did the same thing during a period of unrest in the 1960s over civil rights and the Vietnam War. President Trump is also repeating a phrase made famous by Richard Nixon, the silent majority. Let's talk more about this with Angie Maxwell. She's the director of the Diane Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society at the University of Arkansas. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
So, Angie, President Trump recently tweeted, "The silent majority is stronger than ever." What do you hear in that phrase?
Well, as you know, that phrase has a complicated history. And in 1968, when Nixon used that phrase, he was trying to occupy the middle between Democratic nominee Hubert Humphrey and George Wallace, the segregationist governor of Alabama, who was running as a third-party presidential candidate. And he was doing that while the two parties, the two major parties, were realigning. Republicans had split over the issue of civil rights. And then, of course, the Democratic Party had an influx of new African-American voters, particularly in the South, with 1968 being the first presidential election cycle since the Voting Rights Act. So the silent majority was an attempt to kind of occupy the middle. But of course, Trump is not the middle. After 4 years of his administration's actions, you know, the phrase, you know, kind of rings hollow. He's not Nixon. He's Wallace, right? And his supporters are anything but silent.
I want to go back to Richard Nixon. He made a speech in November of 1969 when he was the president, and he used that phrase, the silent majority. He was trying to win support for his plan for the Vietnam War. Let's listen.
Let historians not record that when America was the most powerful nation in the world, we passed on the other side of the road and allowed the last hopes for peace and freedom of millions of people to be suffocated by the forces of totalitarianism. And so tonight, to you, the great silent majority of my fellow Americans, I ask for your support.
It's really interesting listening to that and hearing what you said, that Trump is not Nixon, he's Wallace. But the political thinking then was that there was a large group of Americans who supported the war but stayed out of politics. Was that true, though? And was there a silent majority in the late 60s, really?
I think in the South, which, you know, Nixon was very concerned about continuing to make inroads in the South, there were what I would call people who, for lack of a better term, liked their racism polite. So they didn't want to have to defend overtly aggressive policies like a George Wallace. And they didn't join those protest movements for civil rights. And they, you know, lumped in a lot of Vietnam protesters as part of this growing, as Wallace had called it, hippie agitators, these folks who wanted to change the status quo. Nixon was trying to say it's fringe. It's a small faction. And those of us who are good Americans want to maintain and conserve this status quo that we're in. But I think what we're seeing in 2020 is a very different situation, because we have seen attitudes dramatically shifting on Black Lives Matter and on police brutality against African Americans. We haven't seen numbers move like that since the big flip in attitudes we had towards gay marriage between, you know, 2010 and 2015. And so it doesn't work, this kind of silent majority appeal, if, one, it's not silent, it's not done politely, it's aggressive, it's overt demonization of protesters, and also if the majority of Americans are showing warmer or approval attitudes of organizations like Black Lives Matter. Hmm. My guess is Trump's using it for two reasons. He likes the idea personally that the polling is wrong, that there's some kind of silent majority who supports him. And two, it's an attempt to stop the bleeding in terms of his support. You know, his unfavorable numbers are so high now, and that makes those people who were on the fence feel less alone, that yes. they're part of something bigger.
And we know that President Trump is very much about image. So would you say that this is more so spin, that there are silent supporters out there, but that may not be the silent majority?
Oh, I definitely think there's some silent supporters, but I mean, Trump supporters are not all very silent. Again, trying to occupy a middle, but he's not a middle. He's been far right on so many issues.
He's been far right on so many issues, but as the 2016 presidential election showed us, there were a significant mm-hmm. amount of supporters, more than just a few fringe supporters. It's why he won the presidency.
Absolutely. Completely fair point. I think that kind of one thing that is different in 2020, and I won't make predictions ever again after 2016, but in 2016, there were 13 states in which the number of people who voted for third-party candidates or write-in candidates was greater than the difference between Clinton and Trump. 13 states and one district in Nebraska, and that accounts for 155 electoral votes. Trump's also had 4 years of an administration. He's in the middle of a pandemic that's been handled badly, and he's running against a white male candidate. All of those factors pull away from that majority, so to speak, that he had. And so how much of it is, you know, a silent majority? I mean, Trump makes it very difficult to defend these positions. It's not a coded racism, for example, that Nixon used with kind of benign neglect of civil rights enforcement. And Nixon made these kind of indefensible traditions defensible somehow. And Trump makes that difficult when he, in his tweets and in, you know, his speeches and language.
You make a point that Joe Biden is also a white man. As we go into the presidential election, what are you thinking about in terms of our previous presidential election and Clinton being a woman up against Donald Trump?
I hate these facts, but we can't change what we don't acknowledge. But when we measure for something called modern sexism as political scientists, which is not a belief that women cannot do the job, but it's a distrust of women who want to do the job, that measure had about a 6-point effect. So it was strong as racial resentment was in terms of predicting vote for Obama. Hmm. And yet, we kind of fail to acknowledge it because it isn't overt. It is a tendency towards distrust. So if you look at what issues hurt Clinton, it wasn't that she wasn't strong enough to do the job or she was weak. It was issues related to trust, and we're primed to distrust, you know, a woman who wants that job. And so that is not a factor in 2020. I'm not taking anything away from, you know, Joe Biden's candidacy, but he's not even able to campaign a great deal because of the pandemic. And yet we see these numbers. And so, you know, we have to remember that that's a factor, and we have to continue to get more and more comfortable with women that want to lead.
Of course, you say you're not going to make predictions, especially after 2016. But the polls show that presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden is ahead. But by presidential election standards, I mean, if we go by previous elections, at around this time, we're talking July, a lot can change between July and November.
It's true. I mean, in terms of polling and kind of what I know and understand, it's the Democrats to lose. Could there be an issue that comes up? Sure. But the combination, when we look at Trump's falling approval numbers, which are just a snapshot, when we look at the number of people who have organized since 2016, it puts a lot more states in play than were before. I remember talking to, you know, folks after the 2018 midterms that had really become energized for the first time in politics behind Stacey Abrams' candidacy in Georgia, Andrew Gillum's in Florida, and Beto O'Rourke's in Texas. And they were so disappointed when all three lost. But their organization and the people that they brought into the Democratic Party, those are can be permanent, you know, shifts. So that effort that's been put in, the big unknown is what coronavirus will do. That's still the big unknown. But in terms of favorability for Biden versus Trump and the lack of a strong third party candidate or even any third party candidate, it's definitely, you know, advantage Biden right now.
Angie Maxwell is the director of the Diane Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society, an associate professor of political science and holder of the Diane Blair Endowed Professorship in Southern Studies at the University of Arkansas. Angie, talking about the idea of the silent majority in the presidential campaign. Thank you so much.
Thank you.